The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like a...
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley in the studio with Ada Nestor. Ada, welcome.
Hello. Excited to be here. Only a little bit of time left until the biggest election of our lives.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few days. Isn't it? I mean, it's been an interesting year, and it's going to remain, I think, fascinating as we go forward. We've got a great setup today, a great plan for the show today. We're going to start out this first half hour. We're going to talk about some of these recent events that have been happening, which are just part of this endless stream of somewhat exciting things. I mean,
excitement.
This has really been a great time.
Yeah.
And then at 12:30 to 1 o'clock, we're going to have Ezra Cohen call in. Ezra is the former acting Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security in the Donald Trump administration. Now, those that remember Ezra Cohen's role, he was intimately involved in, I think, as I would describe it, battling the swamp.
Yeah.
And so we're very excited to have him on. And then from 1 to 2 o'clock, we're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. Now, Darren's been with us many times on the Conservative Voice, and we've always enjoyed those calls. But we are lucky that today he's going to be with us in the studio. Now, Darren was with us last night at a Keystone Town Hall that we did. It was
amazing.
It was a wonderful time. Yeah. We had a great crowd.
And if you want to watch the replay, you can actually watch that on the Conservative Voice on X, where we are streaming live today as well.
Yeah, we are up on X right now.
Yep.
Yeah, so... So you can watch this on X or listen on the app on your iPhone or Android, or you can go to the website for WWDB AM 860 and you could click the Listen Live link and listen there. So we hope that that our friends across Pennsylvania, across Southeast Pennsylvania, you know, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, you know, all the states that we've got folks dialing
in.
The
South, we have people in the South listening to us too. It's pretty wild the feedback we get from people all over the country. And I think part of it is they want to know what's going on in Pennsylvania. What is happening here in Pennsylvania? What are you seeing there? Because they're not hearing, I think, the full story from the media.
Well, I think that's right. And also, you know, we focus on Southeast Pennsylvania because it's such a critical battlefield.
Yeah.
We are definitely fighting behind enemy lines here. You know, it's been a leftist-run, globalist sort of central controls area for a long, long time. So we're really fighting behind enemy lines. But we're also talking about the things that are happening around the nation and the world. So
yeah.
When Darren is on later, we're going to cover some of the major areas of conflict around the world and get a little more depth on some of the points we've talked about before, places such as Ukraine and even some places maybe that we covered last night that people aren't thinking about all the time. So that should be a great hour we'll do from 1 to 2. And, you know, this campaign this year has been unlike anything I think that's been done before.
Yeah.
First of all, the idea that the Trump campaign integrated into the Republican Party, which we remember, you know, there were a lot of resistance to candidates in the past. He has largely crushed that by simply running the campaign through the party and doing it proactively, not, you know, inserting people, hiring people that work in county offices, and really, proactively pushing the website where he's recruiting people through Trump Force 47 and then deploying them through the county offices, some of the county offices across Pennsylvania. It's been really quite a different approach than he took in 2016 and 2020.
Yeah.
Because, of course, in those years, the Trump campaign ran completely parallel to a very, let's say, uncooperative party.
Yeah.
While that was successful, there were a lot of people out knocking doors. Obviously, he won in 16, won again in 20. But, you know, in the end, this is a different approach, and I think it's been great. So, you know, we were talking last night with the crowd a little bit about what's different this time.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that's different is that the Trump campaign, meaning Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and surrogates, have been in Southeast Pennsylvania, or Pennsylvania as the whole, at least twice a week.
Yeah. I mean, there are an endless supply of events if you want to go meet these people who are running to represent you. You can see them. You can see their surrogates. We have a roundtable in Delaware County on Tuesday. Tulsi Gabbard and Riley Gaines are coming as the surrogates with IWV on Sunday in Philadelphia. There are so many things happening constantly. Just the excitement is real. And I think that that is actually what's bringing them back.
I think you're right. And the crowds.
Yeah.
The crowds are incredible.
They were turning people away in Lancaster.
They turned away 2,000 people in Lancaster County. And I was talking to Ken Lang up in Center County the other day, and he works with Turning Point USA up there on campus.
Oh, speaking of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk and Vivek will be on the campus of Westchester University on Halloween. You can get tickets for it.
On Halloween.
They're doing a table, Ask Me Anything or Argue, you know, the debate things that they do on Westchester University's campus. Everyone should come to that. That should be really interesting.
You know, it'd be interesting to watch some of the professors that are there try to argue their leftist ideology, because they end up getting either furious or just crying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just hard because it is interesting.
Or violent.
I had a debate, you know, an impromptu discussion, let's say, with some leftists the other day. And these are very comfortable people that have, you know, stacks in their 401ks. I mean, you know, the 401k has been bulging because of all the profits from all the wars and everything. And they're worried about climate. So I asked them some questions. Well, where do you think we are with this carbon you're so afraid of? They have no idea.
No.
Well, where was it, say, 140 million? No idea. What level of carbon do we get to where everything died? They have no idea. It turns out the things they're most passionate about, they know nothing about.
Every time.
And yet they're out there for hours and hours on this beautiful October afternoon on a Sunday.
Doomsaying.
Oh, like, absolutely. And telling everybody, you know, be a good
the
person.
The end is near. Yeah. I mean, didn't we like kind of brush those people out of society? Why do we listen to these people?
Well, they're more kind now. They seem kind. And while they're out there doing this, I said, well, do you understand that while you're out here chirping about something you know nothing about, that you're completely ignorant of what's going on, there are 320,000 children that Homeland Services or Health and Human Services has admitted they've lost.
Poof.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
So you realize that because of your vote and your political ideology, 400,000 Americans are dead from fentanyl because we refuse to defend the border and we refuse to pressure China and the cartels not to import this chemical weapon.
Yeah.
They have no idea. They know nothing. They're so blissfully ignorant and yet extraordinarily passionate.
Blissful is true to a certain degree, but as soon as you push back and they don't really know what the answer is or don't have the right answer, that blissfulness disappears rapidly.
It was interesting to watch this gentleman, maybe not a gentleman, get up in my face. I mean, he really got within inches of my face, and he's yelling at me, you know, Trump put kids in cages. Another fascinating thing. This is twice in about a week and a half.
Yeah, Tone and Tenor.
Right, remember
John
that?
John stayed after and was welcomed onto the Tone and Tenor show. And I listened for that whole hour, and I heard her surprise when I don't know if it was John or the host who mentioned it.
Randall,
her shock that it was Obama who set those cages up. It was Obama who did it. Was just so incredible to listen to. I love hearing when people are shocked or surprised or maybe woken up a little bit by just a little piece of information. And that was a really cool moment.
Well, and I find it shocking that the passion, right? So this guy, not a week after that, throws this comment about kids in cages. And he said, do you know what president cruelly separated, you know, children from their parents? And I said, that was Barack Obama.
I do.
And his whole face just contorted into like torturous, you know. So I said, look, get on your phone and search it.
Yeah.
And I kept checking back in his little booth, and he's pounding on his phone trying to get the right answer. And it turns out he stands up and says, well, Donald Trump did mean things too. Oh, okay, fine. So when you shatter their worldview with fact, they panic or they get angry, they call names, they weep a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are living in a delusional world. And so, of course, I quite enjoy helping enlighten them because, you know, for so many years, like, say, 40 years now, people who support the country want to defend our families, want to defend our children, don't want the border unprotected. We've all been so shy about saying anything, you know, because we don't want to offend the leftist. We don't want to offend.
Oh, the silent conservative. We were all told that, like, it was some moral or wonderful thing to be a silent, the silent majority.
The silent
conservative. No, we were getting beat over the head for years. You just want us to be quiet? You don't want me to offend anyone? What about all the offense I've suffered?
Well,
really?
When you hear these crazy things from leftists, you're just supposed to look at your shoes and shuffle back and forth and quietly suffer. No, you know, that's over. They are so delusional. Another area that has really been interesting. I did a segment last night in the town hall called They Don't Know.
They don't know.
And there's a billboard that's been put up by a great a great educational group. Their point is to educate people on the issues.
Yeah,
it's called Keystone Fair Business Partners, and they put up a billboard that says abortion legal up to 24 weeks in PA. Is that not enough?
Is that not enough?
The thing is, what has been spurred by that billboard and by that sort of getting out into social media and whatnot is that people who are serious abortion enthusiast voters, I mean, they are all about abortion. It's the only thing they focus on. They'll sacrifice their kids and family and economic. Yep. They'll sacrifice the border. They don't care about people dying. They don't care about anything. And then you find out they have no idea what the law is.
Yep.
They don't know what the law is or how it's created. And these are people who think they're educated.
That's my answer. Anytime anyone brings up abortion to me, I look at them with a perplexed look on my face and say, is 24 weeks not enough? I've had three kids. 24 weeks, you're almost at the finish line. I never made it to turn, so I was literally almost at the finish line. But that's a baby. That's a baby who could theoretically survive outside the womb. You can't make your mind up by 24 weeks, and then they'll throw out the medical necessity or something like that, but the reality is that's a real small portion of the abortions that are performed in this country.
Well, it is. And I said to somebody the other night, you know, do they want to have a child old enough to ride a bike? I mean, what is the line where they're finally willing to say,
do we have up till like 3 years old?
Yeah.
If the terrible twos are really rough, yeah, like, can we rethink the decision?
We got to get with our doctor and make a personal choice. You know, so it's just ridiculous.
This kid's driving me nuts.
That they're so incredibly passionate on issues they simply know nothing about.
Yeah.
And if they think they've learned, that it's typically one or two bullet points they picked off of MSNBC or they picked up off of a friend, and they really aren't aware. So I view it as our job as citizens of the country to help these people become educated. It's our job to get out and actually deliver facts. That's why, you know, what Keystone Fair Business Partners is doing is great, because they're not, this is not a partisan group. They're simply educating the public and putting out the actual facts. And when you look at some of the messaging, it's
powerful. I recently just saw a billboard. I think I was driving to the airport on 95, and they had a billboard up there in regards to immigration numbers. I think that people are just woefully unaware of what those numbers really are, and they're drastic. It's high.
Well, it's insanity what that is. I mean, when you here, I'll pull up the numbers. When you look at the number of criminals that have been brought in, and I don't mean, you know, people that just crossed the border illegally. I'm talking about people who
just got out of prison for murder and rape.
Yeah, and who are you know, murderers.
Yeah.
I mean, literal
criminals, not the crime was crossing the border. No, they were criminals before they got here.
And you get into this discussion of, you know, the group Tren de Aragua, who we've talked about now for months, didn't exist here just a short time ago.
Yeah. And it's only a couple apartment complexes, guys. What's everyone getting so upset about? They've only taken over a few apartment complexes in a couple states. I don't know why everyone's so up in arms about this. It's not a big deal.
I can never imagine hearing somebody on a major outlet saying, well, don't worry, it's only a few apartment complexes.
JD handled that brilliantly, because my face would have registered. I'm not very good at hiding my expression or like my feelings on my face. My face, I probably would have fallen out of that chair if she had said that to me. Like, only a few? Are you serious?
Right.
Like, that's still a few complexes
just
taken over by some criminal gangs, right?
You know, and I guess the theory is that as long as you don't live in those apartment complexes,
it doesn't bother you.
But listen, you know, the wolf is coming. The wolf is coming
here.
For all of us.
The wolf is
coming in the form of inflation. The wolf is coming in the form of the fentanyl problem. The wolf is coming in the form of homelessness. Homelessness is growing because of high interest rates coupled with outlandish home valuations. And of course,
and the federal government subsidizing rents for illegal immigrants, which is bumping the rents that they're able to charge, the price for rent.
And
the government's paying it happily. So then now the regular middle class or lower class American citizens can't even afford to live in those apartments unless they're run by Tren de Aragua.
Well, then, right. They're getting forced out of these apartments in favor of the mass migrants who are coming in.
Well, because the federal government's writing those checks.
Right.
They're not worried about getting paid. They know the government's going to come through and pay them.
Oh, they know it.
It's crazy.
You know, the government also sometimes in some markets that I've talked to people in are paying above market.
So then these people think that they can charge above market.
Yeah.
And now no one can afford it.
If they're going to get, you know, a 10% premium, They're going with the best payment. It's a certain guarantee, and they'll run for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, a tenant could roll out in 6 months. So the illegal immigrants, this is another Keystone Fair Business Partners billboard, which I thought was fascinating. The illegal immigrants that have come here, the illegal aliens, 425,000 convicted criminals.
Yeah.
Now, those are the ones we know about.
Right.
We also know tens of thousands of military-age Chinese fighting-age males, right? I'm talking like, you know, fit people. And to get someone from China into the country, it's not $2,000 or $3,000 like it is from Guatemala.
Right.
You're talking $20,000 to $35,000 to bring them in.
And think about it. It's not just from China. We're getting military-age men who are being trained by ISIS coming across our border from Africa and from the Middle East. And they're here. They're here, and their rent's being paid for. These are terrorist cells. And we have them here on our soil now.
Well, and the question is then, so for the climate voters that I talked on the weekend, do you think they know any of this?
No.
Do you think that they actually believe or are aware that because of the way they vote and the political agenda they've been running, we now have 425,000 convicted criminals, including tens of thousands of murderers that are here? We've got this Trendeo Ragua gang, right? We've got other cartels that are operating in the country. MS-13 now is an army. It was 10,000 10 years ago. I don't know what the number is now.
Well, and think of it. They can't go back to El Salvador.
No.
No one's going to El Salvador.
They're not
the criminals
going back.
Have left that
Although,
country.
I think we ought to be.
I think maybe we should go to El Salvador. That may be safer than America right now.
And, well, and you know, also interestingly, now that this has become something that while that silly climate voter, that 60-year-old very comfortable or 70-year-old very comfortable suburbanite with a stuffed 401k is unaware of. Most Americans have become aware of this, and now it's a political issue. So there are a couple hundred thousand illegal aliens waiting on the border. And when I say illegal aliens, I'm not just meaning the ones that are only classified as illegal aliens. I'm talking also about the fake asylum seekers.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's fake. Let's not pretend it's real.
Well, they're not. They can't be asylum seekers if they have crossed other borders to get here.
That's
period.
Right.
They have to say it at the first one.
Right.
So you're no longer seeking asylum if you make it all the way up to our southern border or, honestly, down to our northern border, because that is also a problem.
Well, I'm going to give you another billboard that Keystone Fair Business Partners put up. 10 million illegal border crossings in 4 years. Now, those are the ones we know about. Those are the ones that we have seen encounters, 10.5 million. But we know there are at least 2 million gotaways. And we know that there are millions of gotaways we haven't seen because they're crossing, in regions where there's no border protection or, you know. So we know that there are many that have never been encountered. So the number isn't really 10. It's actually much higher than that.
Yeah.
And in that, at least 1,800 on the terror watch list. Now, those aren't like tourists. Those are people who have said, my mission in life is to destroy the United States.
Yeah.
That's my mission in life.
And they're here.
Okay, we want as many of those in the country as we can get. Do you think that that silly, uninformed, uneducated, now I say uneducated because they don't know anything practical.
Yeah.
They think they're educated because they listen to NPR.
Oh, and I'm sure they have all the degrees.
Oh,
they
went
to the best colleges,
maybe,
or universities.
A couple of Harvards in there.
Well-credentialed,
very credentialed.
Know nothing.
But they know absolutely nothing. And
yeah.
And do you think they understand that while they live in fear of terror because they support every war we do,
mm-hmm.
either proactively or idiotically, they don't pay attention to them. But do you think they know that they voted for, and it's because of them, it's because of the votes they cast that 1,800 terror watch list encounters happened on our border? And those are, again, the ones we know about.
Well, listen, Kamala Harris is out on the campaign trail saying that being an undocumented migrant is not a crime. So they aren't criminals, she's saying, on the trail. So honestly, I think a lot of people believe what they're told to believe.
That's right.
They don't put any critical thought into it. Don't do any independent research to verify the claims. They're just like, oh, she said they're not criminals. So they're wonderful people. They're just here for a good life.
I mean, it is so naive. And I think one of our, you know, threats to national security, we're talking about the security of the nation a little bit today. One of the greatest,
a little bit.
Yeah. One of the greatest threats to our national security is the gullibility of Americans.
Yes.
Because we've lived in this unique world. And I say this often, and I apologize for being repetitive, but the reality is the world we live in the United States is unique in all of human history. There's never been a society like this where the average citizen is free to just get in a car and drive to California today. If I want to go to California today, I get in a car and go.
Yeah.
You know, you can get on a train and go anywhere you want. You can get on a plane and go anywhere you want. The level of prosperity that we have as average citizens. Because no, it's not that the aristocracy owns the land, and if you hunt a deer on the aristocracy's land, they'll kill you,
right?
As it was in England. It isn't that we don't have rule of law. We have property rights. Now, I know all of these are being eroded, right? The whole Constitution's being eroded. But there's never been anything like this. And if you've grown up in this, and you've grown up during this period of incredible economic expansion, and of course, in the last, say, 15 years, you've grown up at a time when interest rates are at zero. So, you know, debt is borrowed at no cost. Companies can take all of their earnings and attach it to the equity portion of their capital stack or their balance sheet. They don't have to pay for the debt.
Right.
So earnings have been just outlandish if you're in the equities. And so they've had this incredible experience. They think this is normal. They think this is the way it is in other countries. It isn't.
Nope.
They have no sense. I think most Americans, and this is probably fortunate, have no sense of the utter brutality of these transnational criminal organizations, the way they kill people, the numbers of people that they slaughter in these other countries, the way they have their own wars.
Yeah.
Again, it was only a couple of years ago, three now, I think, where there was a battle that it lasted 3.5 hours, within an hour of the U.S.-Mexico border.
American citizens were killed.
And it was between the federales and a gang.
Yeah.
And they had the firepower to fight the federal government?
Yes.
For 3.5 hours?
Yeah.
I mean, in a nation that has
Did they get their money?
In a nation that has the toughest gun control laws that exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Total gun control law. And yet, who has the guns?
The criminals.
The cartels have enough firepower to take on the federal government and win.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No one's giving up their guns. Like, no one is giving up their guns. We have seen example after example after example over just these last 4 years of why you need to be able to defend yourself and your home and your family. Look at what happened in Israel. Had those people had firearms in their home, maybe they could have defended themselves. And I'm guessing a lot of them didn't, but maybe they did. But I'm not giving up. I saw them come in on parachutes. You think I'm going to give up any of our weapons that I have to protect my family? You're out of your mind. It's not going to happen. Those arguments don't fly anymore.
So you're saying a nation was invaded by people that had a front loader, motorcycles, and kites?
Yeah.
And if you knew the gun control laws in Israel, which we didn't at the time, but we learned afterwards, you were allowed to have one handgun in your home with 50 bullets. 50. Not 500. Yeah. Not 1,000. You know, so when people like that hear, I talked to a gentleman who was is a U.S. citizen a couple of years ago, and he was of Mexican descent, and he told me he had just spent $8,000 on ammunition because he knows what's coming from Mexico. Yeah. He knows these cartels. His family is still in Mexico.
Yeah.
So he knows the evil that's coming across that border. And, you know, in of course, Mexico, he would not be able to get that ammunition unless he was part of a cartel.
Right.
So
it's crazy.
So the idiocy of what we're doing is based, I think, in large part because we have been so comfortable.
And my rule overall, and I think it applies to everything we've just talked about in this first 30 minutes, is I'm not taking advice from people who think the world is overpopulated and they should be the ones to select who, which of us go, okay? Which of us are no longer supposed to be here. So, you know, it's pushed by these multinational organizations, the NGOs, putting out the fear of the climate change, the overpopulation, when in reality, the birth rate's going down across the world. I guess no one really knows why, but some of us know why. And we aren't dealing in it with overpopulation. We're dealing with a situation where in some years, we're going to have issue with underpopulation. And you actually heard Bill Clinton say that at an event for Harris, that we need to import people because we're not having enough babies to replace the population. So they say the quiet stuff out loud. We need them to come here and work.
Well, you know, that's true. I mean, the underpopulation thing is something we never thought we'd see.
Yeah.
But somehow, because of, I think, economic pressure in a large part. And I also
think... But also, these kids are afraid to have children. They're afraid that life is not going to be good or it's so terrible in the world that we shouldn't bring children into it. They've really convinced a generation of children that they shouldn't have kids.
Well, they have. And you know, they've
done
that.
Well, and then they're castrating and sterilizing children with medications and surgeries. So, you know, they're really coming at us from all angles. Continue. Sorry. Yeah,
they really are. And so you've got this group that isn't having children because of their lifestyle, their economic plans, and the training they've had that having children means you surrender your personal freedom, you surrender your economic future. And then the real economics of the fact that it's very expensive to have kids now. I mean, it's just not normal. The numbers are just outrageous.
Yeah.
And so to replace them, we simply bring in people from every third world country in the world. And we don't expect this culture to change. And this comes back to the gullibility of the American, right? So we're sitting here saying, this is normal. What we live in is quite normal. And everybody wants to live in this, right? And they're all like us. Everybody just wants to be free and happy. And that's when you know that these folks are completely ignorant of what's going on in the world around us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you travel to these foreign countries, look at real poverty. I mean real poverty.
Right.
You look at a place where you don't have the Constitution, where you don't have the rule of law, and you don't have property rights, and you start seeing abject poverty.
Yeah.
And with that, you find
abuse and
tyranny,
violence. Yeah.
Tyranny everywhere. And then you see corruption. Now, you think about how corrupt our government has become. I believe the number one role of our federal government is, in fact, laundering money.
Yeah.
And
trafficking. Trafficking is a close second. Trafficking children into the country.
And, well, and trafficking fentanyl. Well, I guess they got a lot of priorities.
They've really diversified over these last four years.
Yeah, they're not just destroying foreign countries anymore. Now they're very busily destroying this one.
Yeah, they really are focused on us finally.
I mean,
I guess we should thank them for that.
Well, I
woke
guess.
Woke a lot of people up.
They have. But it's because we don't understand the risks. And again, these people that I was talking to over the weekend, these happy, silly leftists, you know, they really don't understand what's going on. So part of securing the nation is helping these people understand. The people in your circle who are willfully ignorant, who are happily listening to NPR and watching MSNBC and thinking they're being told the truth, it is our job no longer to look at our shoes and shuffle back and forth, but rather to look them in the eye, as I did when this guy got about 2 inches from my nose, and just tell them, you're ignorant. You don't know what's going on. Now, I don't like to be confrontational. This guy got confrontational.
I don't believe you.
I don't do it unless it's necessary.
I think both of us like it a little bit.
That's a little bit, yeah.
I don't know if we'd be here.
It's true that when you got the facts, it's easier.
Yeah.
But you know, the key is find something they care about. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's inflation. Maybe it's abortion. Tell them the truth about abortion.
Right.
The fact that this ability they have to kill these children is going to continue.
Yeah.
There's zero chance it gets
quelled. No one's coming for it here.
Trump is not focused on it. He specifically is not focused on it. And he shouldn't be.
It's now our issue. Yeah.
And what we've got to do is make sure that we get people educated, get them to the polls, and get them to vote. Now, the one question we get a lot is this, you know, should I vote early? And I just had a discussion about it this morning. Should we vote early? My answer is real simple. The safest, most secure way to vote is to vote in person on election day with a paper ballot.
Yeah.
That is unquestionably the best way to go.
Yeah.
Now, there are other reasons why I like voting in person. I like the fact that we have precincts, that it's local, that we haven't centralized that process, which I think is a real threat to our freedoms. Centralized vote counting, which is where this is trying to go, is going to be a disaster.
Absolutely.
So
Oregon,
I like
the Oregon Trail.
That's a little more, you know, nuanced or detailed kind of thought. Here it is, real simple. Safest, most effective, or most secure, vote in person on election day.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the enemy can't see what you're doing if you vote on election day until election day.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's why they're saying we need 10 days to adjust the vote. That's why we're not going to be able to tell you on first night, despite all this technology that's secure and can't be penetrated by any foreign actor. We're going to need 10 days to do that. We're going to need 10. Now, vote in person, vote on election day. If you can't do that, then go vote in person at the voter services department. You know,
sure.
Take the mail-in ballot that they give you, show your ID, vote in person. Do that if you have to. But if you don't have to, please vote in person in any way. Vote however you can vote. Get out. You have to get in the system. If you're not voting, you're complicit. And this year, of course, the choice is very starkly back and forth. I mean, if the globalist leftist cabal continues to control our federal government, this nation is going to fundamentally change. It's going to be very rapid the next 4 years, and we're not going to understand what's happening. It's going to go so fast. These comfy, gullible people are going to see their world change. They think the wolf isn't coming for them. The wolf is coming for them.
The wolf is here. The wolf is here. The wolf is shooting in a parking lot of Wawa in the borough of Westchester. I mean, there's been things that we've never seen here before in our little sleepy area. And it's here now. The violence is here. It's happening.
It is here. And it's spreading all the time. I mean, we've been talking about this ever-expanding problem that everybody in the collar counties of Philadelphia thinks is sort of constrained to certain parts of Philly.
And
it's
like,
not.
And honestly, the idea that we should just ignore what's going on in Philly because we don't live there, it all comes out. It bleeds into the suburbs. Look at the amount of shoplifting crimes that are going on in Exton and West Whiteland and Euclid. It is endless robberies. They're not from Westchester. They're taking the SEPTA line, were the buses right out from the city, hitting up, and I mean hitting up, our stores, and then getting back on a bus or a SEPTA line to go back into the city with their goods. So it bleeds out. What's going on in the city matters to what's going on in the suburbs.
Well, and if you're so selfish that you can't think about the impact on your fellow Americans, I mean, like, it doesn't matter to you if somebody a mile away is suffering all this, it doesn't matter. At least start to realize that even for the extraordinarily selfish, it's coming for you too.
Yeah.
There will be nowhere to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is essential that we get people out, we get these votes counted, and we get as much pressure put on the government to count them accurately. That means poll watchers have to be engaged.
Yeah.
People have to be looking at the data. We've got great data experts looking at the data. We've got people looking at process. We need to be actively engaged in this election, and we have to get people out who are going to vote for Donald Trump and for J.D. Vance. If someone like Kamala Harris is allowed to sit in that chair to be the puppet of the puppet masters who control everything today, we will not recover from that.
No.
We're not going to come back. This isn't...
This is it. I don't think Elon's exaggerating when he says this is the last election if Harris
I don't either.
Wins. I don't think it's an exaggeration. And I hate to say that, but I also remember when the arguments or debates we were having was policy-based, and they were really simple. Like, we both wanted the best for the country, both sides, but we just weren't sure how to get there. That is not where we are now.
Now, what we want to do now is shift very quickly to a discussion with a guest we have calling in, Ezra Cohen, former acting Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, and we really want to get his insights. So, Ezra, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Great, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're glad you're on. And you know, we paid attention when you were in the Trump administration and doing the work you were doing. Of course, we could only see it from afar, so it's a great opportunity to hear from you directly. You know what you were up to then. I don't know if, would you be able to tell us a bit about what it was like when you got engaged as part of the Trump campaign and what I view as the fight against the swamp, as they say, or the fight against this behemoth, the blob, the government that has so overstepped its bounds. What was it like when you confronted that?
Well, first of all, I just want to say real quick on what you just said. You know, as somebody that doesn't live in Pennsylvania, I just want to echo what you were saying, which is Pennsylvania really is could be the make or break state for this election. And so it is doubly important that all of your listeners get out and vote. This is absolutely a life or death election for the United States from my perspective. But I just want to echo what you're saying. Please, if you're living in Pennsylvania and listening to this, please go out and vote. Now to your question.
Wait a minute. One question on that, just real quick. What if it rains? Should we stay home then?
Or what about snow? There could be snow.
What if it's snow?
Get a good umbrella.
Okay. So there it is. If it rains, still vote.
Still go vote.
Okay, good.
Great.
Thanks for that.
So, but you know, onto your question about what it's like battling the swamp. I mean, you know, for me, it was absolutely brutal. I was one of the first people into the White House on January 20th, 2017. And really within minutes of getting into the White House, we were facing the full brunt of the permanent security state trying to derail President Trump's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, one story, you know, I'll just tell briefly, but really for the first 48 hours of the administration, we didn't even know who the acting director of CIA was. We literally had bureaucrats who weren't even appointed by the president calling into the White House Situation Room mm-hmm. in the first few minutes of the administration, attempting to, you know, impersonating and falsely claiming that they were the director of CIA.
Wow.
So, I mean, this really started within the very first minutes. And then, you know, obviously it escalated very quickly to, you know, taking out the president's national security advisor, to opening the special counsel investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of spiraled from there. But whether it was the leaking or the deception, I mean, it was a full-on attack from almost minute one.
Wow.
You know, and I remember that period well, and it's almost like they had everything ready to go to come after the administration when you guys got it in January. And I look at where we are now in what looks like we are going to see a Trump victory in less than 2 weeks. And I really wonder what they're going to be able to do, what damage they're going to be able to do between November and January of 2024 and 2025. And I think back a lot to what you guys went through when you first got in there, because, I mean, we certainly saw things in that first administration, maybe not that they had never been done before, but they were more on display and more apparent to us. We could see it. So Trump really was a great mirror or a great exposer of the things that were maybe going on in the shadows behind the scenes. But when you got into the administration, you were very young, right? You were a pretty young guy.
Yeah, that's right. I was definitely earlier in my career.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'll tell you something. And you know, I don't mean to take away anything from my older colleagues.
No, of course.
Many of them were super capable. But part of the problem is these are just realistically, these are 18-hour day jobs.
Right.
If you want to do it right and not just, you know, put another line on your resume, you've got to be able to work 18 hours a day. And frankly, the volume of information that you've got to be on top of is it's really hard to comprehend if you haven't done it. And you know, just looking back at it, when I'm 60, I'm not sure I'd be up to doing this type of job.
Right, it's a lot of work.
So I think that the advantage of really being younger at that point was just, you know, being able to put up with the 18 hours, 7 days a week. It's really hard to do.
I thought it was interesting. And so I've been following your career. I followed the Trump administration very closely and directly. I didn't get it through the media because I really quickly understood that the media I was consuming was not giving me the full story. So, you know, I paid attention every press gaggle, every bill signing event, every time, you know, he was in front of a microphone or his administration were in front of a microphone, I was listening directly to them. And it was interesting when you came in because your position had usually been filled by CIA agents and your background was, I guess, DIA. I forget where you were before DIA, but you were in defense intelligence and not on the CIA side. Did you receive a lot of pushback from that when you first got in there?
Well, you kind of have two questions there. First, I want to tackle your first question, which, and I'll get to both of them. What do I think the permanent security state has planned for Trump between now and inauguration? I mean, we're already beginning to see, and just today you saw this leaked article mm-hmm. in the Wall Street Journal from, you know, anonymous intelligence officials talking about Elon Musk's conversations with foreign leaders.
Wow.
And that is almost certainly a sign of what's to come. Clearly, it seems that that's the result of some sort of intercepted communication. So again, we kind of have the permanent security state weaponizing our intelligence capabilities against somebody that's very closely affiliated with the president, and then really turning around and leaking that to the media.
Right.
So I'm kind of seeing that trend again, and that's extremely concerning. You know, regarding me personally and the background I came from, the Central Intelligence Agency likes to believe that they have monopoly power over the position of senior director for intelligence programs mm-hmm. at the White House. And there's really a reason for that, which is that is their main interface with the White House. Everything that they need to get approval for, all the operations they run, has to go through that office. So from their perspective, they want their handpicked person in that chair to really be a rubber stamp. Now, objectively, the position's basically 50-50 split. About half the people have been former CIA, half of them haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Biden administration, the Obama administration went away from that, which is pretty smart on their part. And President Trump initially did as well, and then ultimately did at the end of the administration. But, you know, they were furious that I was in there, and they were doubly furious because not only was I not their handpicked person in that seat, but I resigned from the civil service the morning of the inauguration. So not only was I not their handpicked person, but they also weren't paying my check anymore. Mm. And so I became a political appointee, and that absolutely bothered them.
Well, and I remember I saw tons of hit pieces on you personally, and you were too young for the job. You didn't know, you weren't prepared enough. And I mean, it looks like you did a pretty good job over 4 years. So I think that maybe they were trying to interfere in that a little bit.
You know, unfortunately, that's just the game that people play in Washington. You know, they're always going to try to find some dig on you to try to get leverage in their dealings with you. You know, my general principle in life is put your head down and just work hard and you'll do fine. However, admittedly, I wasn't prepared for what happened. You know, I came from a very private background, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was immediately thrust into this. They were playing a game I wasn't familiar with initially.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'll just say the first article, and this is kind of an interesting story, and I think it goes to your point. The first article that came out literally was put out the day after I had a very tense call with one of John Brennan's proteges, who for some reason was able to remain in power at CIA. And he said to me on the phone, he said, "Look, you're asking too many questions. Your job is to approve what we send over." And I said, "No, my job is to represent the best interests of the United States and really the president's policies." And he said, "You're politicizing intelligence." And I told him, "We have a political system that runs this country. We don't have a permanent security state. So, you know, if you want to call that politicization, that's fine." And he said, "If that's the way it's going to be, we're going to have a problem with you." The next day, all these articles started coming out. So really for them, it just came down to the fact they did not want somebody there who was going to look out for the best interests of the country, not the best interests of CIA.
Right.
Which kind of gives you an idea how they were operating before you arrived, right?
Yes, I think so to some extent. Although, you know, say what you want about President Obama, but because he was really a creature and the people around him were really a creature of this kind of DC swamp, they understood how to control the bureaucracy, right? They were also at odds with the bureaucracy at the time. You know, John Brennan was a political hack. President Obama put him over at CIA because he knew it would be totally loyal and follow President Obama's policies. And, you know, so they didn't have as much of a problem because I have to say Obama really understood how to politically control the bureaucracy.
Well, and Brennan, though, he wasn't loyal because he respected the chain of command. He was loyal because he's an ideologue. He was loyal because he supported those policies, no matter how destructive they were to the United States.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he has totally agree. I mean, Brennan's kind of policy positions are certainly not in line with the best interests of the United States.
Right.
However, he was a loyal foot soldier to President Obama, and he made sure that the agency marched in that direction. I think that's something that we really, even in the first term, never totally figured out. But I have very, very high faith that President Trump, he said it publicly. He knows now what he didn't know in 2017, is how the bureaucracy works.
This is a really critical point that we've been making. We made it last night at a town hall we had here in town. Fabulous evening. Really great questions from the audience. It was wonderful, really.
Yeah.
But one of the points we keep making is it is, in fact, different this time. I understand how dangerous it is to make that assumption. But there are some things that are different this time, and not the least of those is the education of Trump and all of his cadre of supporters and the people he might put in the administration who really now understand the depth and breadth of the treason in D.C. It is a treasonous city, and I don't think it's normal for Americans to just understand that. I don't think Donald Trump understood that. I think he expected, for example, if he hires a general, the general is going to respect the chain of command. And the general, because of his oath and his patriotic duty, is going to be a patriot.
Yeah.
And I think he learned that, in fact, it is not the case in D.C. that it is a city filled with patriots.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he had a very idealistic view of government. He thought it should operate the way, you know, we kind of read about it in the textbooks. And look, I mean, he didn't come from a swamp background, right?
So this, Thank God.
This is very right. I mean, there's advantages, there's disadvantages to that. But now we've now made up for the downsides of that outside perspective, right? He's got enough of an inside perspective. He knows that the administrative state, the permanent security state, is filled with people that do not have the interests of the United States in mind. They have the interests of furthering their bureaucratic objectives over the interests of the United States. This is so key. And, you know, the other thing, too, which I know that President Trump understands now, mm-hmm. but the Democrats, Obama, Biden, they have done such a good job of politicizing the ranks of all of these organizations. So these leaders, you know, these generals, these are political animals who have been put into these jobs by people like Mark Milley. They've been hand selected for their loyalty to his vision for the United States, not the American dream. And I see, and we're already seeing it, President Trump is going to be absolutely equipped and ready to handle that on day one.
I think that's just a major shift. It's a major advantage. And I think there are a couple of others that are really important that have more to do with the public. One is that the public is far more enlightened. If you go back and look at the Gallup polling on trust in corporate media, it's at what is literally an all-time low at 32%. It's never been that low before. Even in 16, it was at 33.4% in their polling. Now, that's a small difference, but it's a downward trend, So we're not so easily as a nation fooled by the constant spewing of corporate media. I'm not implying it doesn't have power. They have tremendous power and influence.
For 30 to 35% of Americans, it's the only news they get.
Well, for them, it's Bible.
It's the Bible.
Yeah.
And I think the 4 years of like communism light, the 4 year free trial of this is what your country will look like.
Right.
So I think that woke a lot of people up too.
Agreed.
And especially in our cities. Our cities are suffering. And it used to just be a few of them, you know, that were in really bad shape. But no, it's any city, anywhere right now.
Yeah.
Anywhere. And it's drugs. It's people literally laying on the streets. So yeah, communism light doesn't look so good. And well, we should change course.
We talk a lot about... Go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to hit on the drug thing. And this is really kind of a key thing for me. You know, when I moved over to the Pentagon, initially I was in charge of counter-narcotics. And, you know, our office was the one that was funding the construction of the wall. You know, what I saw there was... It was right during COVID where the yearly death numbers from fentanyl peaked to over 80,000. By the way, it's now at about 120,000 deaths per year. And, you know, my office went to Mark Esper and we said, look, we have 80,000 Americans dying due to stuff coming across the southern border. We got to do more to secure the southern border. And what did Mark Esper do at that critical point? He actually cut the counter drug budget.
Wow.
Which was directly against what the president told him. And you know, my point on this, and I think President Trump has said this so well, but you know, 9/11 was a horrible thing. We had about 3,000 Americans that were murdered in cold blood. And look what we did. We have 120,000 Americans being murdered in cold blood by drugs coming across the southern border now. If that's not a justification to use our military to defend these 120,000 people a year, I don't know what is.
Right.
And that's something that Trump totally gets.
And it's poisoning. You know, it's not like they can use fentanyl as much or as often as they want, and maybe they might overdose and die. No, the smallest amount of fentanyl can kill you, especially if you've never been exposed to it. It's poisoning. We're hearing stories of teenage kids who were handed a pill from their friend that has a little fentanyl in it. They've never done drugs before, and they die. They are gone. So I agree with you. I think so much should be brought to bear to end this crisis because we're not making the fentanyl here. It is all coming in.
Well, it is. And we know where it's coming from. We know who's doing it. We know why. Yep. They've just we had this conversation last night about the reversal of the opium wars. But I was sitting with some history folks at a county commissioner's meeting a few years ago, and they were talking about the preparations they were doing for the 250th celebration. And I couldn't figure out why the government was funding that. I didn't understand why that's the role of county government. It certainly doesn't seem to me to be something they should be spending money on. Nevertheless, the role of government is never considered in expenditures. But these history people, and I said to them, and this is about the time that the fentanyl problem had really, you know, I mean, it was hard to ignore. And I said, well, you know, don't you see that this is simply the reversal of a policy or a reversal of the opium wars from, I don't know, 1840, 1842, something like that. And it's just China shipping this to the cartels that import it, and our government is facilitating it. These people were astonished. These are historians, could not draw any of these connections. They couldn't put it together because, of course, it's this thing where they just refuse to know.
Yeah.
You know, when we, so at this point, Ezra, we're looking at 400,000 dead Americans in 4 years, right, from fentanyl. And those 400,000 dead are dead because of policies that have been put in place, reversal of the policies that Trump put in place. And then we're told, but to defend the border, we have to pass this new bipartisan legislation. Is that true? Did we need that legislation to be able to defend the border?
This is just a distraction, right? It's just a complete distraction. We have all of the legal authorities that we need now to secure the border. Full stop.
Yeah.
The U.S. Department of Defense has enormous counter-narcotics authorities in law that have been there for decades.
Yep.
How do you think we defeated the cartels in Colombia? Right. That was done by the Department of Defense. So, you know, we don't need any additional laws. That's a trick to, one, pile up those types of laws with more pork contracts and whatever
else
to just waste money, and also to distract people from the fact that there is actually a pretty direct point from A to, there's a pretty direct route from A to B on this. We have to secure the border to stop the flow of drugs. We need to use the extremely well-trained, capable troops that we have to save 120,000 American lives. Why is that controversial?
We went to war for 20 years because 2,745 people, I'm sorry if I don't get the numbers
exactly
right, died. We've lost 400,000 and we're ignoring it, and we wanted to put a bill in place that would make it permanent, the invasion. Look, changing the invasion from illegal aliens entering the country to making it legal doesn't change the fact that it's an invasion.
Yes.
It doesn't make us less or more safe. So you know, it is disgusting to me that we keep going down these tracks where we pass the Inflation Reduction Act and they say in public, we know this is going to increase inflation, right?
I just want to say, why aren't they moving? Why aren't they getting off their rear on this to actually move and deal with the situation? I mean, it's pretty obvious to me, right? Like, you know, the people, I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of my time of my life in Philadelphia. You know, I went back there recently. It's almost unrecognizable.
Yeah.
But those folks that are on the street corners there going through the worst imaginable thing that could happen to them in their lives, they're not hanging out at the D.C. cocktail parties, right? This isn't the constituency of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, right? These are people that are down on their luck. They're not getting invited to, you know, the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown. So, I mean, that's basically the problem. They just don't care.
Well, but you made a really important point I want to expand there, which is when you were here in Philadelphia before, it wasn't like that. This is new. So a lot of the world has become aware of Kensington. We've only got we have 3 minutes left. A lot of the world's become aware of this place called Kensington. You know where that is. It's in Philly. And they're aware of it. They think it was probably always like that. But we did a day in Kensington, and it was made clear to us that 4 years ago, Kensington was not this sort of zombie zone that it is now. This is new. This has changed. Again, something that's different in this election cycle is that people in Kensington know that, know why it happened, and many of them have stepped away from 100 years of captivity by this Democrat ideology and stepped into saying, I'm going to vote differently, I'm going to think differently, I'm going to vote in my own interests and those of my community and my nation. It is a fundamental shift, and we've had this discussion several times.
Ezra, I just want to say, I wanted to get to Israel. I watched an interview you did about a year ago after you returned from visiting Israel after the attack, and we only have 2 minutes left. So we're going to have to bring you back on, because I'd really love to talk to you about what's going on a year later and the things that we've seen and what we're seeing in their actions and everything that they've done to try and, you know, I guess, fight Iran by proxy with Hamas and the terrorists in the Gaza Strip. So I am very appreciative that you came on today. We are hoping that you are going to be able to come up here for a town hall and talk to the community we have created here, because we know that we are the last line of hope for this country. And the only way to get people active and engaged is to educate them, is to tell them the uncomfortable truths that no one else wants to talk about, and then openly talking about it. So I really appreciate everything that you've been doing. You are, can you let people know where they can find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I only have, there are a lot of people impersonating me on Twitter, but I have one account.
It's because you're the coolest person in the, I mean, come on.
it's you know, but I'm, you can find me at Ezra A. Cohen on Twitter. And I just want, just real quick on Israel. I mean, President Trump got this exactly right. This is all coming from Iran. And the window to act with Iran is closing. If they get a nuclear weapon, our options are super limited for the United States. If we they will be doing three times as many terrorist attacks as the U.S. once against the U.S. once they get a nuclear weapon. And we don't need any troops on the ground in Iran to solve the problem.
Those are great.
That's it.
Those are great points. And we're going to hit this again a little bit after the after the break. But Ezra, thank you so much for joining us on The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. And again, we hope that you will join the show once again. A fascinating discussion.
Great. Thanks a lot.